9, good morning. And in the studio with me now, Charlie Flats.
How long have we been doing this?
Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what have you got?
Got a kind of a list of things, so let's just kind of burn through them quickly, okay? And I won't share all the details. You just can go to appropriate websites and look it up. First off, High Star is having their grand opening out at the DeJorio Center. If you haven't been out there for a ride, it's definitely worth checking out, especially before it gets really hot, because that's going to be one of those early and late season areas. We do have an event out in Round Valley this weekend. The PC Running Series, I believe, is doing their 5K. We also have the Centerville Basin Rec Centers doing their grand opening, so that's pretty cool. For Trail World, Jenny's is officially closed at the upper section there, so you are now getting forced onto a section of Loose Moose and up onto the Drift Road on up. If you don't love the Drift Road, which is understandable, you know, maybe seek out some alternatives like John's, possibly Crescent Mine Grade, avoid the area. Yeah, you know, this work is necessary EPA work, and it's for your safety. So, unfortunately, it is one more season worth of this.
Okay, so it's rest of the summer.
It's pretty much for the summer. So, unless something changes. But they're doing snow lines as well as EPA work at the same time, snowmaking lines. So, Mojave, I just talked to Rick this morning. He's asking that if people are up in that area by Mojave, please try to stay off of it. It still has snow and water in it, and because of the way that's designed as a flow trail and so forth, bikes being on it at this point is really probably more detrimental than necessary. So we'd love to just let that dry out for another week is what it probably will take. You know, basically we believe everything up to Mid-Mountain is pretty good. Mid-Mountain seems to be really in great shape for almost all reports except for the tightest little corners. If you're really thinking about being up high, people ask about the crest and pine cone. You can see the west face of Jupiter, and you can see how much snow is still there. So pine cone, the crest, are all of those sort of elevations. I think we have at least probably, you know, realistically for pine cone, because it is like the crest, July 1st, probably, unless we really get a real good heat wave in here and kind of melt things out. But that last half mile up there, pine cone usually holds snow for quite a while. We're also going to have a bit of activity next week. Well, one more event. So next week, next Saturday, is Mountain Trail's first Round Valley Rambler half marathon in Round Valley as well. This is part of our Triple Trail Challenge. And certainly hope you'll come out and join us. Races support our trail work, so that's always a good thing to jump in for. And it's probably a relatively simple half marathon, as far as half marathons can be. So also there will be a bunch of activity out in Round Valley starting next week sometime. You're going to see some crews out there that are state fire crews. These guys are going to be basically creating a fire break utilizing the already soft surface trail areas, so the double tracks, and widening them out a little bit. So this is not part of a development or anything else. This is just part of something that people think is really going to be prudent, and it's an important part of just kind of staying in state protocol for fire management. So you will see some stuff. Maybe it will take a day or two. It'll take a couple of days. So, and we'll deal with it from there. So,
okay. What's the latest on the WOW Trail? That's just, you've just got one segment done, right?
We have 11 miles done. We're still waiting for a little bit more word on the upper loops that we're trying to do. You know, the WOW is probably completely rideable at the moment. I have not been out there, but I've talked to people that said it was. Getting there might be still, you can get over there now on the Midway, Guardsman's Road. I haven't been over there yet, so need to get over there.
Yeah, but in terms of what you still plan to do, you're still looking for the easements?
We're still looking for signature. You know, some land purchases need to be completed still, and they're not. So at that time, I think once that happens, like everything, hopefully a planning process and a quick approval, and we'll be able to finish up. In the meantime, it still tends to be a really well-used trail, and people seem to be enjoying it. So,
yeah. Have you ridden the High Star trails?
I did. I went out there last Friday. Found them really enjoyable. They're going to be a great resource for early and late season riding for sure, because they're like Riverview. They face west. They're on a hillside. if you go out there then in the middle of the day in July, you will get baked. So I would avoid that. It's really going to be a morning time ride kind of thing for the summer.
Okay.
Thanks, Leslie. I think that's it. And have a good weekend.
It's Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. KPCW News Time. News Time now, 8:15. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, joining me now on the phone with his monthly update of what's going on in the planning and building world of Summit County is Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start off. The Eastside Planning Commission recently got a look at the proposed South Point development. This is the southernmost parcel of Promontory. The applicant asking for an amendment to the SPOB, which would basically triple the amount of density there. So when will the Eastside Planning Commission actually hold a work session on this?
Well, the Planning Commission actually held their first work session last Thursday, a week ago, Thursday night, over in Camas. And a well-attended meeting. The primary reason for that was to explain what this project entails, both for the Planning Commission and the public, to make sure that all groups knew exactly the history behind the Promontory project, which is a long history. It goes back like to roughly the year 2000, and is in a fairly involved, pretty complex project, and this is a change to a portion of it, 800 acres off of Browns Canyon. So we wanted to make sure that everybody had a chance to, A, get educated about it and take some initial public comment that would help, I guess, frame the discussion moving into the future.
Yeah, and I guess I misspoke. I really meant public hearing. I mean, are we that far along that it's...
Well, I guess that was a call that I needed to make early on in the process. I guess one option would have been just to hold a work session directly with the Planning Commission to go through, introduce the project. But the location of the property, the sort of the specifics of what's being requested in terms of the change, I thought it was probably appropriate to get early public comment and reaction sooner rather than later, because there's a lot of pieces associated with this. And if we know where some of the areas of concern are, if we know where there are areas that need to be more carefully explored, better to have that early rather than later. And so I made the call, let's do a public hearing. Let's get some public comment. Let's get some initial reaction from the Planning Commission, and then go back and work on developing a framework or a structure. How do we unbundle this project to review it in a way that we can be as efficient in our review and as timely as possible? And so that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be sitting down as a staff here next week to kind of put together a strategy that we can propose for the Planning Commission. We'll go back with what we come up with as our initial proposal for the future review of this, probably the end of June or early first part of July meeting, and that'll be a work session. And yeah, even though it's a work session, doesn't mean that this isn't a public meeting that the public can't attend, but I think we believe the next step is to all agree on the best way to move forward with the review of this big project.
Yeah, so, I mean, are they adding density, or are they taking density away from their other parcels to make this happen?
No, what's being proposed is actually additional density. I may be off a bit with the numbers, but I think what's being proposed on this 800 acres, which again is a subset of the broader Promontory development, I think they're requesting to add about 735 residential units. It brings the overall total in that area, not the entire Promontory, but just in the South Point area, up to a little over 1,000 units. I think they're proposing, I think I'm right on this, about 190,000 square feet of additional commercial density and a hotel room with, I may not have the specific size of the project, but I think they're talking around 350 rooms. So, that's a significant increase beyond what's currently entitled under the development agreement.
Right. And then we're going to have to look at community benefits, of which what? We have a water park?
Well, it's kind of a, what's being proposed is a bundle of existing obligations and new. In terms of what's new being proposed, I think they're proposing about 130, maybe a little more, about 130 acres of additional open space and trail areas. There's a proposal to convey about 100 acres, maybe a little bit more, to Weber Basin for water storage. It'd be, you know, an impoundment reservoir for the water system here in the area. There's a proposal to provide a 40-acre school site to the South Summit School District. Not quite sure the specifics of that. Could be a high school. Could be, you know, another school, middle school. I think the discussions have been that might be a potential high school site. And then to a somewhat lesser degree, you know, some space for some acreage for, you know, a transit facility, a park and ride. Those are the primary community benefits that are being offered at this point in time.
Okay.
And go ahead.
I just want to move on because we don't have a lot of time. Rich Sontag, who has been involved with Promontory for years, recused himself from the Planning Commission, which he's a member of, for this discussion. Was there any discussion, though, about whether he should stay in the room during the meeting like he did?
Well, this is what I do know. There were a couple of specific conversations with Rich and the attorney's office, at which point in time I believe what was discussed is, you know, the conflict of interest protocol and how that's laid out in the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission bylaws. I believe the way those bylaws are written, Rich can't speak for the project. He can't be part of the deliberation. He can't vote. He can't lobby his fellow commissioners. So that's the minimum legal test that he is held to per the bylaws. In terms of him being physically present in the room, the bylaws are silent to that, I believe. Unlike other jurisdictions, I believe back in the day when I was with Park City, in situations like that, the planning commissioner had to actually not be in the room at that point during the discussions. That's currently not the case the way our bylaws are written. So in terms of the standard that Rich would be held to, those are the criteria that he would need to abide by. And, yeah, I do believe that there was at least one, if not two, discussions on that prior to the meeting.
Okay. We've heard about a report that Beehive Homes is looking to has put in another application for a nursing facility somewhere in the Snyderville Basin. Where is that being planned for?
You know, just like you, I've heard that that rumor. We have not been actually approached with a formal application. We haven't had any discussions on any sites. I think what, to my knowledge, there have just been a couple general inquiries to the planning staff that if there was going to be an expansion of the existing facility, what would that process be? The same would hold true in the event that they would build another facility on another piece of property somewhere in the basin. It would go through the same conditional use permit process that the existing facility went through. But to date, we haven't been approached with any pre-application discussions. Haven't had any, you know, conversations of specific sites. So have just heard that they're out there potentially looking for additional space, but nothing specific.
Okay, I had just read about that in this week's Park City Council staff report on senior housing, so that's where that came from.
Yeah.
Moving on, is the Skullcandy building on track to be finished?
The building's completed. They've been issued a certificate of occupancy. Where we're at with them right now are just some final site improvements that, when the building was allowed for occupancy, the weather was such they couldn't be completed, and I believe most of those are landscaping related. So the building is open and Skull Candy is in there and conducting business.
All right. Any other new applications for the Tech Park?
No. No new applications at this point in time. I hope you're probably aware. I want to let the public know that we're currently involved in a neighborhood master planning area for the Kimball Junction area, which would include the Boyer Tech Park. As a matter of fact, when I jump off this call, we're going to be going into a meeting to discuss particularly potential land use scenarios in that area. That project is slated to run through, or this exercise is slated to run through most of the summer. We're hoping to have some preliminary recommendations that we can move forward to the public, the Planning Commission, and the Council by early fall this year.
So those meetings are open to the public?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Pat, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just one thing that I might mention really quickly is if people are moving or driving out on I-80 north of Wanship, they're going to be seeing a lot of construction activity on the hillside. That's the Rocky Mountain power lines. Those are the service upgrades, the new poles that are going in, and that work is upgrading the lines running from Croydon to Quinns Junction here, out here by town. They're really working from both ends towards the middle. There's some visual scarring going on right now as a result of the grading. Want to make people rest assured that that was anticipated. The revegetation of those areas are part of the construction contract, and the reveg is actually being addressed through our development improvements agreement that the engineering department is managing. So if they see that work out there, that's what it's about, and there is a strategy to help deal with that grading afterwards. But hopefully that'll be completed by the end of the summer.
Okay, Pat, as always, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Pat Putt, Summit County Community Development Director. This is the Local News Hour on KNUS News Time Now, 8:29. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Council got an earful last night from drivers who make their living shuttling around guests, as the council was scheduled to approve a nearly $369,000 contract with Downtowner. In the studio with a recap of that discussion and more, I have Councilmember Cindy Matsumoto. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
So you heard from maybe a half dozen business owners saying that it was irresponsible for the council to spend this kind of money that they say would just add more cars to the road. What was your response to the concerns you heard?
Well, our response was that we wanted to bring them into the conversation more and postponed a vote on whether we would go forward with that program for a couple weeks so that we could further the discussion was the response. You know, our goals were to use electric cars to, you know, reduce emissions and to have, you know, originally we talked about it was more that last mile to get to the bus stop and stuff. But, you know, the pilot program was going to be in the downtown area, and the taxi cabs had a lot of concerns about it taking away their business.
Yeah. So I guess I'm surprised that you didn't bring them into the mix in the first place.
Yes. I think some of them were contacted and talked with, but I don't think that, you know, sometimes, you know, we put out an effort and people don't hear things until the last minute. And so I'm not blaming anybody, but there's time to bring them in now. So we'll do that.
So there was a request for proposal then? I mean,
yes,
people could
yes,
have submitted
yes.
and given a...
Yes. And there were four companies, I believe, that did respond to the request for proposals.
And the other three were local?
No. There was a little confusion. The three weren't local, and one had some local ties.
Okay. Now, the Downtowner company was the staff recommendation. And was this because, what, they've been doing it in other resort towns, and they're using Teslas? Was that a big factor?
Well, people that got up and spoke felt that it was a big factor, sort of like, oh, a Tesla in Park City, you know, you're so fancy. But, you know, the real key there was to have an electric vehicle and cut down on our carbon footprint. And I guess the Tesla offers a very good deal for leasing those items. And so all the companies that responded to our RFP did suggest that they use Teslas. So, but there was some backlash just for that brand.
So beat up minivans aren't going to do it?
I guess not. Well, if they're electric, maybe.
Critics also say that there are simple apps that can achieve the same result. So I guess why wouldn't the city use a local company, especially if they claim that these are apps that would address the needs for less money?
Well, I think the RFP did ask, once again, the electric vehicle, I think, was the a big drawback for, you know, but there are other apps out there. But we were really looking to... it's called, what is it called? Bus on the go. No, it's not called bus on the go, but, you know, it's sort of like, you know, we were looking to maybe use smaller vehicles to get in there and get people to the bus line or go through neighborhoods that don't have as much demand or, you know, at different times and use our bigger buses on more demanding routes. And the transportation department thought, even though that is a big price tag, $68,000. They thought that it was economical, that it would actually save money in the long run.
And this is only being for within the Park City limits then, right? I mean, Summit County is going to do something similar for the basin?
Well, Park City, I mean, Summit County is interested in that also to, like, scoop people up into the to the bus stops. So they are interested in it. This was a pilot program that was in Park City. It wasn't all of Park City Park City limits. It basically went daily to the Erie, and down to Old Town and down to, looked like, right around Thames Canyon Drive.
All right. It does not go into Park Meadows, which is probably our biggest neighborhood, no?
Right, yeah. And, you know, it went into Prospector, which, you know, has quite a few bus routes. Yeah, so I was curious about that, although we don't want to put the taxi cabs out of business. And so there's some button on the app or something that you can push if you're going to be out of the zone so that you can then contact a taxi cab company instead.
So we did note that there were a few younger millennial people that thought this was a great idea.
Yep, there were. And Andy reported that he'd heard very good feedback from other community members. So, you know, so for the next couple of weeks, I think we'll reach out to the people in the transportation businesses in town, but also reach out more to the community to get more feedback from the community.
Okay, and this will return to your meeting at the end of the month then?
Yes, it will.
Okay. I guess, you know, once you run this six-month pilot program, I mean, at what point do you know it was a success? Just by the number of riders? I mean, have you guys come up with the criteria at which that success will be looked at?
And that was another point that was brought up, that maybe we needed to have, we would get constant feedback. They'd know how many, but we hadn't really set any goals. That might be something that we do in the next 2 weeks also.
All right. Also, a work session on the budget and then some approvals. Staff and council getting a 2% raise. Water rates will be going up 6%. I guess, as I asked the public utilities director earlier this week, I mean, when do we see our water rates plateau? Never?
Yeah, that's sort of what I'm thinking. it's a challenge. We have a challenging water system, and we have very big challenges by the EPA. And so we do have... did he say when it would plateau? I know there is a little chart out there. I do say it leveling off, but I think that's just the increases level off a little bit. So there will be increases that will continue.
Yeah, any concern when you saw the chart that lists Park City as the highest, most expensive average water rates in the state? I mean,
by far.
Twice as much as Summit Water.
Right. Well, yes, and I had asked for that chart. We had seen it years ago. We had seen a similar chart before. We've had some significant raises. And it is a concern because we are in a water agreement with our regional water partners, which is Mountain Regional and Summit Water. And so, you know, if one of us were to need water or we're supposed to, you know, we're able to sell water or to the other partner or, you know, have a group kind of project to bring water in. So, you know, I think there does have to be something of leveling of some of those water costs. There would be, say, if by chance one of the water companies that had a lower rate needed water and Park City had available water, we wouldn't sell it to them at the rate that they're paying. We'd have to sell them at the rate that our citizens pay.
All right.
It is my belief.
The council also approved two property exchanges, I guess. This is with Redis Park City LLC, also the owner of the Bonanza Flat property. The two parcels are the Mine Bench and the Marsac 100. So is any money changing hands here, or is this just we get the property in exchange for not having them build the five affordable housing units, the gondola, and new trails in the Empire Pass area?
Right. No, there's no money exchanged. So, you know, and also whether we'd be able to have a bankrupt company fulfill those goals was sort of pie in the sky. So I don't believe personally that we were giving anything up because I don't believe they were ever going to fulfill their obligations. So, yes, we get the property. You know, we hope that we will be able to build some affordable housing units on 100 Marsac and on the Mine Bench. Right now is, you know, slated maybe for more public works or some kind of public, you know, city needs.
Yeah, that's some very flat property up there.
Yeah,
though.
That's sort of
so. Why not housing there?
Well, maybe, you know, it might be a combination. It's a big piece of property. You know, nothing's been decided. You know, we're just thrilled actually to get that property for, you know, for the exchange.
All right. And again, you're just saying even though it might be less expensive to have them build the five units, you didn't think you'd get them anyway.
I personally didn't think we'd get them.
All right. The Peace House waiver. Peace House was asking for an almost $200,000 fee waiver. What did you decide there?
Well, we're all very supportive of the Peace House, but they actually asked to bring it back because they had some further details. So we didn't make a decision on that.
Okay, and this isn't, it's not like they're writing a check for $200,000. It would just be reduced from their construction that they hope to do out there?
No, I think they would write a check to the city for some of those fees. Yes, because they're fees that, building fees that the city does collect.
Okay. You also got an update on the 4th of July parade. The city apparently has cut back on the number of entries. We're down to 44.
Well,
floats.
There was still another day. I think you can enter today. So, you know, we had in the past years grown to about 70-ish, and I asked that question last night, and we were down to more in the low 50s last year, which I thought was a great amount. So, you know, we want it to be more local and more fun, and
So it's not a first-come, first-serve thing. I mean, if the Park City High School Marching Band didn't apply until the last day, they would probably still have preference over somebody else.
Yes.
If, you know, outside of Park City.
Yes, being local was important for to be in the parade.
Okay. Council also approved some fee reductions for the third parties participating in the 4th of July and Miners Day, but my understanding is that the last day you're going to do it? Or last year you're going to do it?
No. We haven't made that decision yet. We've had a lot of discussion this year about fee waivers. You know, people, you know, a lot of nonprofits come to us with events and they want free fee waivers. And understandable, they're raising money for you know, usually, you know, a very good cause in the Park City area. But the waiving the fees, especially for our increase in police and safety, it puts a real strain on our police and safety budget. So we are having continued discussions on what do we think we can do and what should our policy be. So the policy now is for a fee waiver over $25,000 has to come to city council, and we make the decision, but we'd like to have some guidelines on that. So we're working on that policy. So I don't know what will happen in the next parade.
Okay. And what we don't want to do, though, I mean, because part of the what makes the 4th of July parade and day funky, as the council is trying to get back to, is like the pancake breakfast in the park. And we hate to see that go away because they can't afford the fees.
Right. And we would hate to see it being taken over by a commercial person where you don't know the person that's serving you the pancake. And so we're trying to keep it hometown and as close to the citizens as we can.
Okay. And then finally, there was whether or not we re-up another $200,000 for Mountain Accord.
It wasn't. We had already voted to for $300,000 to the Mountain Accord. As my understanding, we put in $100,000, and so there's $200,000 of what we had already voted on before to go towards the Mountain Accord, which has a new name, which I'm sure you know better than I do,
Leslie. The Wasatch Commission. Yeah.
And also has a new platform. It is going under more of a commission, I guess, that has more regulations and, you know, has to follow the open meeting laws and everything.
Okay.
So that was more what that was about last night.
All right. Cindy, anything else you want to mention?
Nope.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:43. It's Leslie Thatcher. Well, what's been dubbed Park City's biggest outdoor dinner party, Savor the Summit, will be held next Saturday, June 17th. It's being organized by the Park City Restaurant Association. And in the studio with details, Executive Director Ginger Reese. Good morning, Ginger.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So how many restaurants do we have participating this year?
We have 27 restaurants this year. We're very excited.
So that's more, I think, than in years
past?
Yeah,
two more than last year. Yep. So we're excited. We have some new participants this year. We're excited to have the new owners of the eating establishment participating for the first time. And they do have a few seats left. So if you're looking for some seats, they would be a person to call for sure.
Okay. And yeah. I was going to ask, what do ticket sales look like? I mean, are there open seats?
Let's see. They're going fast. So again, I do encourage everyone to get out there. So the eating establishment still has seats. Bistro 412 still has seats. I believe Bodego and Bonavita both still have seats. And I have not heard from Shabu, Fletcher's, or Handel. So I'm assuming they might have. That would surprise me, but I'm assuming they might have some seats. And then Bangkok Thai.
All right. So yeah. The cost is, it depends on where you go.
Exactly. So everyone's like, how do I get a ticket? You don't get a ticket. You determine where you want, you know, what you want to dine, what you want to spend, and then you call that restaurant directly and make your reservation directly with them.
You have all of that contact information on the website.
Yes, savorthesummit.com. You can find out which restaurants are participating and their. If they provided a menu, then we'll showcase that as well.
All right. So when does Main Street close down?
So Main Street will close at 1 o'clock on Saturday the 17th so that everybody can start moving into the street and setting up. And then it will reopen. We hope to have everything back up and running by midnight.
All right. It's a huge amount of labor. I mean, but people still enjoy doing it. I don't know
yeah.
that it's a big moneymaker for them. But.
You know, I think that it's become, like you said, the kickoff to the summer season. The restaurants is a ton of work for them. They really, really enjoy it. And it's a great showcase of all of our culinary offerings. So we're excited. It's our 10th year. We've been doing this for 10 years. So we're very excited about that. We're bringing back the Spirit Garden this year. So it's the High West Spirit Garden. They're presenting it. Freshies will be serving their amazing seafood as well in the Spirit Garden. So if you're not wanting to maybe make a reservation, that's a great place to come and hang out. It's programmed with bands throughout the evening. It will go live at 5 p.m. and you can sit in there and enjoy a High West Spirit and a Freshies lobster roll and enjoy some sounds. And then also, too, just new this year at the Top of the Street Provisions. They're not doing the traditional sit down and dine. They're doing tapas. The brass tag is teaming up with them and helping them with food, and then they're going to program that with music and spirits as well. So that's another great option as well to get out onto the street.
Okay, so they won't be on a table, but they'll be in and out of the provisions.
Yeah.
Eatery. Okay.
Yeah. Well, they're coming out onto the street, but they're not doing the traditional sit down and dine format. And that's a $50 price point. So that's a great way to get out and enjoy the evening as well.
Okay. Let's see. Can you give us the rundown of the music that you've got lined up?
Yes. So again, the High West Spirit Garden will open up at 5 p.m. and we will have DJ Dimes performing first, then Tony Holiday and the Velatinos. And then Changing Lanes will close it out. So three great acts. It should be super fun. And the weather's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
I'm predicting it. The weather is going to be amazing.
All right. SavorTheSummit.com.
Yes.
All right. Anything else going on with the Restaurant Association?
Well, just one mention. Right after Savor the Summit, we'll start gearing up for the July online cocktail contest. So stay tuned for information on that.
Okay. Ginger, thanks for coming
in. Thank you.
It's Ginger Rees, Executive Director of the Park City Restaurant Association. It's the local news.